Even zoeken hoor. Dat is toch geen olifant? Ja, bingo. Om in de sfeer te komen. Voor als je onverhoopt moet landen in Edo Elephant Park. Nee, dat zal niet gebeuren. Maar deze aflevering gaat wel over Zuid-Afrika. Daar kun je prachtig paragliden. De enige keer dat ik in het land was, niet om te vliegen maar om te backpacken, kon ik toch één duurvlucht maken. In de buurt van Franshoek was dat, een uurtje rijden van Kaapstad. Aan een Nova Axon op leeftijd. Zoek dat scherm maar eens op. Het maakte die vlucht net een tikkie spannender. Maar het was fantastisch. Deze aflevering spreek ik, Harro Brouwer, met Jan Minnaar van Cloud-Based Paragliding. Ik sprak Jan eerder in Neustift im Stubaital in Oostenrijk. En Jan, die vliegt al heel wat jaar. Leuk dat je luistert naar Vliegpraat.
I first started in April 1991. Just friends. I was very involved with motorsport, motocross in particular, very competitive. Then was involved with the admin side, clerk of the course, rules, regulations. I was involved that way. Friends of mine said, come and try this. And I said, you guys don't. Where's the thrill? All I see you do is hang around, because I used to hang in the strong wind above my house. And they took me off one day to try paragliding, and I made a bad mistake on the second flight, nearly crashed into the side of the mountain. And then I realized, whoa, there's quite a bit of control needed, and also there's a high level of adrenaline just gone past. And I really got hooked, and I ran up and down the sand dune about 17 times. And the more I got into paragliding and started, because you could just fly and have a very calm flight, but once you started throwing it around, you had to be in control, and you could get your heart rate up, so you could control what you wanted to do. And that was really interesting for me from a control point of view. But the more I flew, every single flight was different, every day was different, and I suddenly realized I'm totally reliant on Mother Nature to give me this thrill or the calm that I need from the air. And you know, then you've become involved with nature. You start looking at things differently. Why is the wind stronger today? Why are the clouds forming? You know, and it's so, nature becomes such an integral part of it that's what really kept me going. Was, and every day was different. And even 30 years, every launch is different. Even if you do 10 launches in a day, and the subtle changes in the weather that you've got to take notice of, and that's a challenge. You know. Yeah, that's why. That's got me going.
What does paragliding mean to you?
Well, I've made it my profession. I was the first one in the country to say, I'm going to do this full time. And the instructing part is also, I really love that. I love giving people that chance to get flying for whatever reasons they want to fly for. But it's continuously there. And for me, paragliding is just escapism as well. Because when I'm in the air, I don't have, and I'm flying for myself, I'm not responsible to anybody else but myself. And you can just grow from it. You can be on a steady path the whole time. I'm just, every day, I'm not going to do this. Or you can challenge yourself a bit as well and go cross country or things like that. So for me, paragliding has become my life. It's become a way of life. And I've met lots of very different people from all different professions, CEOs of multi-million dollar companies, to a guy that literally sweeps the street as a living. And we all have one thing in common. We all enjoy flying paragliders. The first paraglider actually in South Africa was a climber called Andy de Klerk, very famous. He pioneered a lot of routes in the Chamonix Valley. And he was in Chamonix when they flew the first time in 86 from Musi. He saw this, thought it was a great idea, brought the very first paraglider back to the country, to South Africa, got hold of his good climbing friend, Andrew Smith, and he said, Bob, you've got to try this out. We're going to go off Table Mountain. So they went off, didn't go off Table Mountain, but they went off Devil's Peak, which is on the side of Table Mountain, very strong wind. And yeah, that was the beginning of paragliding in South Africa.
And flying from Table Mountain is quite difficult, I believe, because you have, most of the time, you have clouds on top.
Yes, 9 times out of 10 it is. And also,
I say that all the time.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of times.
Yeah. And the other thing with Table Mountain is that the prevailing wind normally comes from the Musenberg side, from the southeast side, so it's coming over the back, and that's what causes the clouds on Table Mountain. So when there are no clouds, this may be a lighter southeast wind, so we're flying in really difficult meter conditions there. So everybody who loves to go, would like to go off Table Mountain, it's quite difficult to go from there.
Can you remember your first flight?
Yes, very clearly. I can remember the first one was so boring. I flew straight down with a very 14-cell glider called the G2 XL, off 50-meter height, straight down. Thought this is really boring. My instructor got me confused with somebody else. Sent me to the top of the sand dune, which was 130 meters. I got to the top. They said, what are you doing here? I said, I don't know. Kerber said I should come to the top. Oh, well, if he said it's okay, you can go. No radios, no other instruction. This is literally my second flight on the paraglider. Took off, really hard turn to the left, because he said go left, then go right. The left turn nearly took me straight back into the side of the hill. I countered it with a hard turn to the right, and it was like that for at least 80 meters down, this very hard left, right, till I leveled out and said, my heart can't take this, and then landed. And then that was my very first flight. I can remember then after that running up and down the dune another 17 times.
Okay, so your second flight was exciting.
It was exciting. The movie Toy Story, I think was Buzz Lightyear said it, I was falling with style.
Paragliding in South Africa. Can you elaborate on that?
So we don't have many members, only 800, I think, at last count. It sort of fluctuates between 700 to 800 licensed pilots. We have the Wilderness Garden Route area. It's almost in the top 10 paragliding destinations in the world to come to. In the early 90s, all the world records from up to 300 kilometers were all set in South Africa, from Kuruman up north. So we had, that was a long distance mecca. We had Japanese guys coming out, Ushari, the Savinians. So we had these two different, totally different sides of it. We have Cape Town, which is a little bit more laid back, coastal soaring, relaxed type of flying, garden route as well, really easy training sites. Then we have the northern part of the country, which is more mountains, and there we have most of our good competition pilots come from up north rather than down south, because those guys will just go fly cross country every weekend. You know, there's no soaring, so they're thermal flying, they're going out, they're doing things. It's definitely split into with the commercial tandems now. That's taken away a lot, I think, from paragliding as such. Has become a whole new entity, and it's just all about the money. But it has created more awareness of paragliding. So there are people who come to do a course now know that what paragliding is about, and they are genuinely interested. So that side's quite good. We were growing quite considerably in the late 90s, and then that just dropped off. But if you look at the worldwide figures somewhere, you'll see all over, we had mountain biking coming in, kite surfing. So that sort of took the numbers away, where before people would do paragliding only in summer. And then you've got mountain biking or whatever. They'd have a winter sport, skiing or snowboarding. So those figures all started dropping, but now we're seeing people doing multiple sports, but maybe not concentrating on just one. So we are seeing more people coming back into paragliding, but now they're mountain biking or they're kiting as well. So they have different sports. Once they get to sort of families as well are important. So you'll find people start when they're single, then they have kids, and then responsibilities change. And early on in my paragliding career, when I established the school, I realized that you have to keep the families together for the flying partner to fly. So that's what started me bringing people to Europe on a holiday type thing, and the guys would go flying. I'd organize tourist attractions for the non-flying partner. I've got to be careful that I can't say the wife, because normally quite often it's the other way around. So I think the success of my school is that we still have people that are trained in the early days still flying, because we've been kept them involved all the way through their sort of paragliding career and their family things. And so in the whole, we've seen that in South Africa, that where there's no ongoing support or something, the guys just stop flying, and then it's very difficult to come back again. And I think with the event of multimedia, WhatsApp, everybody's on the WhatsApp group. So there's clubs, or they form a club, and which is really all about the social side. That, with a bit of, and being in the club, there was always feedback on safety issues. Now with these WhatsApp groups, people are in their own small little groups, and they become isolated in that group. So that social part of paragliding seems to have disappeared in South Africa.
Really?
Yeah. So we'll have the competition guys flying, you know, they'll fly all the competitions. Wilderness is a bit different because it is really social, because there's a lot of retired people come just for the summer to come, and they come and sit and fly, and we have groups coming from Europe. So we see a lot more of the social side, but up north it's really not that much of social activity. We have our national championships in Barberton near Kruger Park, which is a very festive and very sociable event, and it's fiercely competitive during the day, but there's a really good vibe later on. But that, when you talk to the locals, the guys that are from that area, you'll find that that only happens once a year. So yeah, it's a pity. I think we could do more to get that social side going again.
Flying in South Africa, is it suitable for all categories of pilots?
Yeah, most definitely. From the beginner, we have all South Africa. We've sort of graded our sites as to difficulty. So you need to have a license to fly some sites, and some sites you need to have a license plus a sign off because of the weather conditions, or it's a tricky launch. And then we have Signal Hill, Lion's Head, you know, in Cape Town, are quite tricky sites as well. People with licenses with low airtime pilots to fly Lion's Head, but they won't, for instance, be allowed to fly Signal Hill or Table Mountain. Table Mountain requires you to have our sports license or that equivalent. So that's about 300 flights, and you have to be guided by a local guy before you go up there because of the weather conditions. Wilderness is really easy flying. People can come on their own, and as long as they get in touch with the locals and find out what the rules are like anywhere in the world, you can manage as a beginner European pilot, if I can say that. You'll be able to handle the wilderness quite easily.
When we take safety into account?
I haven't had a serious injury at all, which even in my motocross days, I haven't broken a bone. I've had a bad twisted ankle running off the student, and put my foot into a big mole hole on our favourite site, Sedgefield. But I wasn't in the air then, but I can still attribute that maybe to paragliding, but I haven't had a serious injury as such from that. I've thrown my reserve once because I had to. That was at a competition, but landed perfectly. So that was making the right decision to throw the reserve as well, could have been there. And then I think I'm also a little bit more cautious with regards to the weather. So I'm really will, I'm one of the first pilots to stand down if I think that the conditions are worsening or they're not quite right. So, and I see a lot of, when there is an accident with somebody, because they made a decision based on ego or not taking consideration of the weather, those guys, they affect the whole group around them, and normally that whole group stops flying. Or they're really difficult to get back into flying because they've just had this, well, not really a gung-ho attitude, but not really, the safety aspect hasn't been in the back of their mind. It's always been, oh, it was the glider's fault, oh, it was the weather changed. It was never, oh, the pilot didn't have the knowledge or didn't apply the knowledge to prevent that from happening. So for me, I think it definitely the pilot is the person where the safety factor comes in. He should have the weather knowledge. If he's not happy about the weather, his friend should be able to make a decision on that. And like we said, ego, for me, I've seen that being the cause of many, many, many accidents.
On the other hand, it's still, you know, there's always a risk.
Yes, I think paragliding, there's the risk factor is still there. It's always going to be there, and it's the randomness, you know, of these accidents happening. I can talk about Andrew Smith, our most experienced comp pilot, most experienced person in the country. I was flying with him that day. He was flying, coming into land. Very few thermals around. It was really that we were just going to fly to the bottom. He got one or two thermals. He'd used them, climbed up to just above takeoff, then came in, decided to go and land. And then on landing, a wingtip went. And then the glider stalled, and he was close to the ground. And, yeah, he spent 2 months in a coma, and it was the same time as COVID, so I think that had a part to play in it, but he just passed away. So the randomness of that, you know, like I say, very experienced person, small thing, it does happen, yes.
I mean, since you just said about egos, and yeah. I don't mean egos as in look at me, but
yeah.
I think it's not alone the ego. Yes. Do you agree?
Yes, yeah. Sometimes it's more the randomness of... You know, there's lots of guys with egos who are super, super pilots. I mean, they wouldn't be there if they didn't have some sort of drive, ego-driven and whatever. But yes, we are in Mother Nature, and we know it just changes, you know. So, and the risk factor is still there. Yeah, It'll never be super safe. We're seeing these new gliders coming out, ENAs, you know, with the performance of a competition glider of 5-6 years ago, you know. And everybody thinks, oh, well, they're super safe. I don't have to really think about flying them, but you do have to think about flying them. Because it's a glider, it needs to still have some pressure on it. You've got to react to what happens. It's like driving your car. You're not going to just come to a stop street and not think about take your foot off the accelerator, put your foot on the brake, or come to a corner, go around the corner, the car starts sliding. You're not going to take your hands off the steering wheel. You should naturally just go back and control it, even though it might be a Volvo or something, you know, the highest safety rating, you know. I can only liken it to that, you know.
You knew Andrew very well?
Yes, very well. He was actually mentoring the South African team. He was a mentor to a lot of people. He did a lot for the sport in South Africa. Especially the later couple of years, we spent quite a lot of time, social time together as well, going to competitions and just even on safari with him. We were quite close at the end. It has been a little bit difficult to accept, but And it's always going to be missing, you know, when especially the competitions, there's typical things he would have said to us or made a joke about that everybody will say the same thing at the same time because that's the way he was.
Yeah. These stories always strike me. I don't know about you, but I mean, it happens. Sometimes it happens.
Yeah, it is sad. It does affect you. It doesn't matter how one of your friends passes. There's still going to be an effect.
Okay, let's talk about something nice now. What would you suggest to Europeans considering flying in South Africa?
Come. Don't worry about it. Just come. the condition. People might talk about the conditions. I mean, it's not that much different. Yes, they'll talk about strong wind, but the wind's not really that strong. You know, there are limits to how strong you can fly. So, and South Africa, especially Cape Town, Garden Route, is really paraglider friendly. There's lots of accommodation. There's lots of things to do for the non-flying people. There's lots of culture. It's really safe. I mean, I know that the TV and the news reports Africa in such a bad light. It's almost like we live in a little bubble in wilderness, which, and the Garden Route, where we have really good government, provincial government, and everybody's happy, and they realized, for us, I think, that World Cup in 2010, was it? 20, whenever there was Soccer World Cup, that changed the locals' attitude to service delivery, from the waiters to the staff and the restaurants. 6 months later, there was a complete different change where they realized that their job would make, as a waiter, they have a chance to cheer somebody up, give them good food, give them good service, and a change, especially in wilderness. We saw this huge change where it became so service, and people, the tourists are our friends rather than, here's another tourist. So, and it's really easy flying. It's easy to get there. There's no jet lag. I think it's perfect for us. 9-10 hours at the most, and you're lying on the beach and your wife is flying, or vice versa.
Do you have a tip for the listeners?
Yeah, so if you want to come to South Africa, the best is to get hold of a local school. You can contact us as well. We're also and we can point you in the right direction, give you information. And also we have SAHPA, SAHPA.co.za. Unfortunately, the only thing we need, you have to have a South African license. So we convert your national license into a foreign temporary membership because of the civil aviation rules and regulations. And we do that through SAHPA. So, and they have quite a good web page as well. And everything's done online. So you can just go straight onto SAHPA.co.za and check it out. Or you can contact me and we can give you more advice as well.
And what will foreign paraglider pilots most enjoy in South Africa, you think?
The food and the wine, apart from the flying.
The braai.
Yes, we'll introduce you to the braai, yes.
Which is the barbecue.
It's not quite barbecue. It's a barbecue done with a lot more style. So we don't put the meat straight onto the flames. You wait for a bit of coal so the temperature is correct. Then you put the meat on. Then it comes out much better. You don't have burnt offerings. Because if we can't fly, we all braai.
Tot zover deze aflevering van Paragliding Vliegpraat over Zuid-Afrika met Jan Minnaar. Vergeet deze podcast niet te raten. Liefst met 5 sterren natuurlijk. Dat maakt de podcast weer beter vindbaar voor andere piloten. En die hebben misschien weer leuke ideeën voor nieuwe onderwerpen. Als je Vliegpraat tof vindt, dan wil je misschien wel een donatie doen. Elke bijdrage is welkom en dat kan via petjeaf.com/paraglidingvliegpraat. Een link vind je in de beschrijving van de podcast-app. Heb je vragen of ideeën, kun je me altijd mailen. harro@hepmp.nl. Dank voor het luisteren en onthoud, een braai is een barbecue, maar wel één met stijl. mooie vluchten en tot de volgende. Thank you.